Scott, thanks for joining us. Maybe let's cut to the chase. What do you think of Donald Trump's show so far?
I have always believed that the United States was under the decades of rule of what we call the establishment, the duopoly, was heading straight towards the abyss. And if left to its own devices, that's what America, that we take the world with us. And I mean nuclear war. I thought that, and I still think that Donald Trump was, it is the only alternative available that can avoid that outcome. One of the things I've said about Donald Trump is that he aspires to revolutionary change. This doesn't mean good. This doesn't mean smooth. This doesn't mean constitutional. This doesn't mean any of the things that people might believe that you're talking about when you're seeking an alternative to nuclear suicide through the duopoly. Donald Trump's doing exactly what Donald Trump said he was going to do, and anybody who thought otherwise was in a fantasy world. This is a man who doesn't have a coherent vision of how America's supposed to operate in the world. He just believed that America would stop operating the way that it was, that the rules-based international order that America had been leading, this global hegemony, was unsustainable, and that something new had to come in. He calls it Make America Great Again. We might want to call it Make America Foolish Again, or Make America Stupid Again, or whatever you want to say. It's not coherent. It's imminently chaotic. But let me give you an example why I continue to watch what Donald Trump's doing with great interest. Let's take the Ukraine conflict. We know that Donald Trump is not going to end this conflict. We know that Donald Trump has no vote in this. This is something that the Russians, through their leader, Vladimir Putin, they alone get to dictate how this conflict ends. We know that it's going to end poorly for Ukraine. Why then play the game? Why then promote American intervention? Because it was never about Ukraine. I think people need to understand that. It was about a larger Russian-European interface. If you take a look at the draft treaty that Russia put on the table back in December of 2021 to both NATO and the United States, it sought a new European security framework, which is broader in context than simply focusing on Ukraine. It's how Russia and Europe and the United States would interface in a way that was respectful of mutual spheres of interest and influence. This is where the United States comes into play. See, this was a dialogue that the Biden administration, that the establishment would never engage in. But this is the very dialogue that I believe that Trump is going to have with Putin about a post-Ukrainian conflict, European, new European security arrangement, which would be radically different than in the past. NATO will probably not be a meaningful part of this dialogue for much longer. Now, if people say they support the demise of NATO, how do you think that's going to happen? Was it going to be smooth? Was it going to be in a way that made Europe happy? No, it was going to be chaotic. There was going to be an element of anarchy attached to it. The United States was going to have to do things that the United States never would have been conceived of being capable of doing. For instance, speaking about seizing Greenland away from NATO ally Denmark. This is all part and parcel of a new approach, a revolutionary approach. The end result will be, I believe, the demise of NATO, the weakening of Europe, the strengthening of European-Russian ties, and getting America out of Europe from a security standpoint. I like that outcome. I'm not saying I'm happy with the process, but I'm saying that to sit here and just call Donald Trump a train wreck ignores the context in which we put that locomotive on the tracks to begin with.
Fascinating. I, too, think we are moving into a postmodern world in which all pretense about rules-based international order all pretense about international law and courts and so on. That's for the birds now. And NATO died when the leader of NATO openly stated that he was going to take Canada as the 51st state of the Union and going to take Greenland off Denmark. Both countries having been loyal cucks for the US Empire all of this time. Fat lot of good it's done them.
I look, I'm laughing because, I mean, it's funny, but it's true. If I wanted to play the game, if I wanted to be on MSNBC or CNN, or if I wanted to be a guest speaker in the Council for Foreign Relations, if I wanted to give testimony at the United States Senate, I would be falling in defense of the rules-based international order. I would be speaking about the nobility of the American obligation to NATO, 80 years of, you know, solid brotherly love. But then I'd be a liar. You see, I've been saying in the lead up well before Donald Trump became president, and I've been warning people, especially Europeans, you're not our friend. We have never viewed you as our friend. You are a tool that we use to achieve the objectives we want. That you don't have a voice, you don't have a vote. That is the reality. We throw you bits and pieces, but at the end of the day, we will use you and, if necessary, break you to achieve what we want. And when I was saying that, everybody's going, oh, yeah, great, Scott. Oh, that's the Scott Ritter we love. And I say, okay, but now we got a president that's doing exactly that. Oh, my God, you're a shill for Trump. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you the way it is. Because I'm sitting here telling you the reality of Donald Trump's posture vis-a-vis the rest of the world does not mean that I support what Donald Trump is doing. What it means is that I recognize that it, for the first time, we have a president who's actually being honest about how America views the rest of the world. And maybe it's time for you to wake up out of the little slumber party you were having, Europe, and recognize we don't like you. We didn't ask you to cut yourself off from cheap Russian gas because we cared about you. We did it because we wanted to destroy Russia using you as the tool. How does it feel? I mean, go listen to Bob Dylan's song, Like a Rolling Stone, and ask yourself the question, how does it feel? Because that's what we're doing to you. That's what we've done to you. We just finally have a president that's being honest about it. I'm not sitting here saying that I applaud what Trump is doing. I'm sitting here saying that this is a necessary dysfunction if we're ever going to get out of where we were collectively together. I prefer to work with a Europe that's proud of itself, a Europe that defines itself not as a collective homogeneous nothing, but as a collection of sovereign states. I like it when Italians are Italians, when French are French, when Germans are Germans, when the British are the British. That's how I like Europe. I don't like this thing called European Union because what the hell is it? It's nothing. It's simply something that we can use. We weaken your national identity. We impose an artificial political, whatever you want to call it, over you. And then we use you and abuse you, and then we will toss you away. And you're in the process of being tossed away right now.
Sobering, indeed. The most immediately dangerous twist in Trump's recent remarks is that he called the king of Jordan, a man whose hold on power is exceedingly fragile, in any case, half of the population of Jordan are already Palestinian refugees, maybe more than half. And Trump called them up and said, I want you to take millions of people from Gaza, maybe for a short term, maybe for the long term. And he said he was going to do the same with al-Sisi, the Egyptian tyrant, today. Assuming that he did make those calls and he did put those points, the only answer from these two tyrants could be no, right? Because both would bring about the destruction of their states.
I agree with you. There's no way that the King of Jordan... I mean, first of all, we're presupposing that the Palestinian population of Gaza would be compliant in such an accord. I don't know, but the last time I checked, Hamas was doing very effective a resistance against the Israelis. The Palestinian people suffered egregiously, but they weren't on their knees surrendering. And I think there's a widespread recognition amongst the Palestinian population that once you leave Gaza, you will never go back to Gaza. So that would be the end of Gaza, the end of the Palestinian dream. And I have a hard time believing that the Palestinian people are that supine. But now we're not talking about phone calls made by Trump to Hamas. We're talking about phone calls made by Trump to Sisi and the Jordanian king. They can't absorb these populations. It would be the end of their respective holds on power. And I don't know why Trump believes that this is feasible. Unless Trump is creating the conditions for regional revolution to topple failed regimes, because there's no doubt that the Sisi regime is a failed regime. There's no doubt that the King of Jordan is a failed monarch. Maybe he's trying to facilitate their demise, but that implies that Donald Trump actually knows a thing or two about the reality of the domestic political situation in both Egypt and Jordan. And I don't believe Donald Trump knows anything. Moreover, I don't believe any of his advisors know anything. Welcome to the new Donald Trump world, where he wakes up in the morning and he decides that he's going to make phone calls to change the world without having a clue what the consequences of these phone calls are. When we speak of revolutionary change, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. Revolutionary change is different than anything you've ever been used for. Do not expect him to turn to the establishment and pick the learned scholars of academia, the people who populate think tanks, and ask them for advice. And do you really want them to give him advice? Because they're the ones that created the situation that Donald Trump inherited. And if you're going to sit there and be critical of that situation, as you have every right to be, what do you want Donald Trump to do? Sustain it? This is how systems fail. The failure part is ugly. And I think we're moving into the fact that much about the Middle East that we currently recognize will not be in place by the time this revolution ends.
Wow, sobering indeed. The ceasefire in Lebanon ended today, but Israel has not withdrawn, as it is bound to do by the terms of the ceasefire. They shot 100 people today in Lebanon, 12 of them dead, including children. What's going to happen there, do you think?
And this is complicated, because in order to answer that, I have to know what the thinking of Hezbollah is at the moment. What I believe is going to happen is Hezbollah is going to revert to its resistance roots, and that they will begin a campaign to evict Israel from the sovereign territory of southern Lebanon. This is the reason why Hezbollah exists. This is the legitimacy of Hezbollah. Now, I know we have a new Christian president who has indicated that's not the direction he wants to go. But I have a hard time believing that this Christian president has a constituency that will permit him to lay at the feet of an Israeli occupier. And so I believe that Hezbollah, which is far more than just a resistance movement, it's a political party. I think Hezbollah has to establish it, the political foundation for ongoing resistance. I believe that's the direction that Hezbollah will go. But it's hard to say, because we don't have Hassan Nasrallah. If Hassan Nasrallah was alive today, it'd be very easy to say what Hezbollah would do. But I have to believe that the people that were raised and reared and trained and brought into power by Hassan Nasrallah are cut from the same piece of cloth. And so I think that Hezbollah is going to revert to resistance, and that they will seek to once again forcibly evict Israel from the illegal occupation of territory in southern Lebanon.
So the European settlers in the West Bank are running rampage Israel is saying it's going to refuse to withdraw from Lebanon, as it is by treaty required to do. The guns may have fallen quiet on the Gaza front, but on the Palestinian front, it's just as dangerous as ever, isn't it?
Thankfully so. That means that that some Palestinians in the West Bank understand what's at stake and understand what's required to create that which they desire, which is a free and independent Palestinian state. They will never get that from Abu Mazen, from Mahmoud Abbas, the traitor, who currently sits at the head of the Palestinian Authority, who has sold his soul to Israel and the United States. There are Palestinians who recognize that the only path to statehood is armed resistance. And again, this means that there will be suffering, tremendous suffering at the hands of Palestinian civilians who live in the West Bank. But the only other option is to allow these settlers to define the terms of coexistence, which means that they will continue to tear down a millennium, olive orchards have been there since the time of Jesus.
The sight of Tony Blair interviewing the foreign minister of the new ISIS Al-Qaeda government in Syria on the stage in Davos, well, it took a strong stomach to look at that, didn't it?
If you looked at it for more than the 2 seconds it took for me to turn it off, you have a stronger stomach than me. I have grown to despise Tony Blair beyond belief, and I don't take anything he says seriously anymore. I'm waiting for the moment when there will be justice in the world and he will be brought to trial and held accountable for the many crimes he has committed. But yes, to have the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, a man who claimed to stand side by side with George W. Bush in the aftermath of the Al-Qaeda attacks on the United States in 9/11, now sitting there talking to a head chopper, a representative of the head choppers, as if this is normal. It defines Tony Blair perfectly.